Welcome to the Let's Talk EMDR podcast, brought to you by the EMDR International Association, or EMDRIA. I'm your host, Kim Howard. In this episode, we are discussing EMDR therapy and traumatic brain injury. Today's guest is EMDR therapist, Dr. Michelle Morrissey. Michelle is based in Pueblo, Colorado, and has extensive experience working with clients who suffer from TBIs. Let's get started. Today, we are speaking with EMDR therapist and approved consultant, Dr. Michelle Morrissey, about working with traumatic brain injuries. Michelle is an author, speaker, trainer, and facilitator. She is the founder of the Morrissey Institute in Pueblo, Colorado. Thank you, Michelle, for being here today. We are so happy that you said yes.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for having me. I'm very glad that we can get this information out there.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming an EMDR therapist.
Well, like most, I had a traumatic childhood. You do the standard talk therapy, and because PTSD shuts down the prefrontal cortex, talk therapy is like banging your head on a wall, and you just can't seem to get past it, and EMDR works bottom up. So I had tried a couple of years of talk therapy, made whatever progress I could. I go into my master's program, and one of my professors was a Vietnam veteran. And he's like, I'm trained in EMDR. This is the stuff you really need to look into it. So I found an EMDR therapist. I worked on those things that weren't able to be resolved with standard talk therapy. It was so mind-blowing, right? I didn't realize I was carrying around an elephant until I did EMDR and all that weight lifted. Then it's like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm floating. Yeah, it was so amazing. It's like, I've got to know this. I've got to do this. So my master's program ended on a Thursday at 10 o'clock. And by the next Friday morning at 8, I was on a plane back to Colorado to get trained.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yes. The internship to get licensed, I just practiced like crazy, went back to do part two. And then from there, little nuggets were placed. A Vietnam veteran came to see me. Are you certified? Ooh, what's certification? Because I was trained by the Institute. So looked into that, and then that just kind of snowballed, and it's like then certification, and then I loved it so much I wanted to be a consultant, and then after that it's like I've got to teach people how to do this. Other people have to know. Didn't realize that working with brain injuries was so uncommon or not a lot out there, so then I turned that into one of my three or four approved advanced trainings right now.
Got it. Yeah. Well, I think it's also very interesting and very positive that someone who had been through the Vietnam War or any war actually knew what EMDR therapy was. I've interviewed some people for November because it's Military Families Month and talked about EMDR therapy and veterans and active duty personnel and just trying to get the word out among people who might have gone through some kind of war situation, and whether the trauma happened in that situation or it happened before they went and served in the military. The fact that somebody knows about it is just so amazing. And we're just so grateful as an organization that the word's getting out there. So
yes.
Thank you.
I would say probably 5 of the 8 calls that we get a day is people specifically asking for EMDR.
Wow. That's wonderful. So you already touched on this a little bit. Maybe you can elaborate. What is your favorite part of working with EMDR therapy?
The quick changes that can occur, the symptom improvement, the confidence. So like Francine says, start low and work your way up. And I know a lot of people teach the opposite, start big and work your way down. But I found a nugget in her book where it said all new trainees should start at a SUD of 5 or below. And when I started to do that, I noticed this snowball effect of peeling away all these small T's. And that became the drive for clients to continue to return.
Got it.
Right.
Got it.
Sometimes when they start on the big stuff, even if they're prepared and ready, it's too big and they drop out,
yeah.
Right? So this has kept clients coming back more and more to work on their things. And it's kind of like chipping away at a mountain. By the time they get to the big stuff, it isn't that big anymore. And it seems scalable and doable for them.
Yeah, I think it can be all overwhelming if you come to therapy and you have this one huge issue that you have to work on or that you want to work on. And it can seem like, you're right, like an elephant in the room, right? And what's that saying about the best way to eat a frog is one bite at a time? And,
yes.
And it probably seems very overwhelming. So it's good to start with the smaller things and then build up to it. And by the time you're there, you're like, oh, this is, you know, not as big of a deal as I thought it was. And I can get through this because I've done all this other prior work with all of these other little T's first. So
exactly. So that the applicability in so many cases, whether it's helping somebody who's a public speaker and they still get nervous, whether it's a phobia of needles and they've got to get shots for whatever reason or give blood, or if it's all the way up to witnessing a murder or being a family member of a suicide or war veterans, whatever it is, you can see all those changes. And it keeps me going and I don't get burned out because I see the change.
That's great. That's good to know. And that is important as a therapist to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and you're not suffering burnout, because that is extremely common in our profession, unfortunately. So let's talk about the meat of why we're here today. So talk to us about what successes you have seen using EMDR therapy for clients who have traumatic brain injury.
Successes are phenomenal. So I treat mild and moderate TBIs. Severe TBIs, I've tried a few over the years. So the severe TBI are those who are paralyzed, can't walk, have been in comas for a month, have to relearn everything. And there was so much shearing to the white matter in the brain and so much axonal damage that EMDR isn't working. It's kind of like getting ECT. You're frying the neural network and it's not, this is my opinion, it's not going across the channels to work. So specifically mild to moderate TBIs. And it doesn't seem to matter the length of time from the brain injury. I had one guy who was in his mid-30s, had a bicycle accident when he was 12. He had a seizure disorder. He was on medication. He was on disability and couldn't work and having several seizures a day. And doing EMDR with him, he went down to only having a couple seizures a week.
Wow.
He needed less medication and he was able to work part-time without stressing his brain.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Wow, yeah. What a wonderful result for not just for you as a therapist, but for him as a
exactly.
human. You know, he gets to go live a life. And so that's beautiful.
I had another young lady with the most TBIs I've ever worked with. She had 11 brain injuries.
Wow.
Skiing accidents, car accidents, trips and falls. Because once you have a brain injury, it affects, depending on where they hit their head, it can affect the proprioception part of the brain, which is kind of like our gyroscope. And it tells us where our body's at in space and time. And those whose proprioception part of the brain has been impacted, they continue to be clumsy, trip and fall, misjudge distances, keep smacking their head, you know, all of that. And EMDR has really helped to reset that in their brain so that doesn't happen anymore.
That's beautiful. What are the myths that you would like to bust about EMDR therapy and TBI?
That it can be done. So I have some consultees in other countries, 3 or 4 other countries, and they've been told, you know, as well as here in the States, you can't do EMDR with brain injuries. So obviously I beg to differ. Starting small. So that's one of the myths, is that you can't do it. You don't necessarily have to be trained in it, but you have to have that desire to learn at least the protocol, figuring out some things to do so you can keep them safe and they can get the benefits from it, right? Obviously, if you take the training or something, then you've got more knowledge, more practice to go into it. You will feel more confident doing it. But it's not like you can just wing it and go, oh, well, this is like a phobia. I can work on phobias and try, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, clearly we believe in training at Embryo. So we prefer that people who are practicing EMDR have been through those courses and certifications and done that kind of work so that the public understands that they've been educated. You know, they just haven't read a book and sat. I mean, you know, my husband and I like to joke about, you know, he's a hands-on guy, right? He wants to do a lot of things himself. And I'm like, just because you can do brain surgery doesn't mean that you should. I mean, literally anybody could do brain surgery. You could get a knife, you could cut into someone's brain, but that doesn't mean that the patient's going to survive with the life that they want.
Yes.
And so you got to learn a little something along the way, right? To make it effectful and impactive and positive. So are there any complexities or difficulties with using EMDR therapy?
Yes. So the number and frequency of brain injuries will impact treatment. Most of the time, They can't do eye movements because it causes them headaches. They cannot tolerate as much information coming in. So, you know, the faster you do eye movements, the more information can come in or be brought up. So you're not doing eye movements. So the speed of the DAS is slower. You have shorter sets because attention span is shorter. So every organ in the brain oscillates at a different frequency, so they don't interfere with each other's job. When you get head injuries, let's just say the one part that should be oscillating at 10 hertz is now doing at 40. So it's like hyper-focused. And the one that's supposed to be fast is slow. So their jobs don't get done correctly. With the hits on the head, how many of them? I had one tell me that on the third brain injury, it was so bad that it was as if she was hearing four different radio stations playing in her head. If you went to anybody else, they would say she was psychotic. But she wasn't. You are hearing all your past traumas. You're hearing what she deemed maybe people from the other realm, ghosts, whatever. And it scared the bejesus out of her.
Right.
So there's a lot of things to be aware of and in how to do this. Okay.
Got it.
You can do auditory tones. You can do the tapping virtually. A lot of it is auditory with one of the sites online. If they don't have it, because I work with the people, a lot of people in rural areas, internet or Wi-Fi is spotty at best, especially when storms come through like yesterday. So you can do it over the phone and just talk them through the speed at which to tap.
How do you practice cultural humility as an EMDR therapist?
It's like obviously cultural sensitivity, but more so. You have to be aware of your own issues, your own culture, and stay on top of it. I never assume because I treat this one population, whether it's Hispanics or Eastern Indians or somebody who's Jehovah, that I know how everybody in that area believes. Everybody's right. Belief is different. So I actually do as much learning as I can prior to taking on the client. Whether I have to call the elders in their church community and ask for their basic tenets so I would know how to guide them within their religious belief system, asking them once they get there, generational trauma, female like oppression being held down, that glass ceiling, gender stuff. And so I'm always learning, expanding, and asking the client so that I can stay on top of things and do things right by them.
Do you happen to have a favorite free EMDR related resource that you would like to suggest for the public or other EMDR therapists?
Bilateralstimulation.io is a free online forum to deliver EMDR virtually. He came out with a paid version this year because he added a way to put tappers to it. So people can plug tappers into their computer and get that. But you can do the free version. It works phenomenal. I absolutely love it. I don't like doing this for the first couple of years of COVID, right? Your shoulder hurts, go to the chiropractor. You know? So you have to find something that you can do that's sustainable and won't injure you as a therapist.
What would you like people outside of the EMDR community to know about TBI?
Don't settle for supposed experts' diagnosis as the end all and be all. So from all of the clients I've worked with, they have gone to neurologists, specialists, psychologists who say that they specialize in brain injuries and probably don't stay up on their education because a lot of the information they're giving them is 30, 40, 50 years old, sit in the dark, don't do anything,
wow.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Gosh.
Yes. So that's a part of it. The other part is, a concussion is not a brain injury. So they're telling these people, if you had a concussion, basically get over it. It's not a brain injury. You're fine.
Yeah, that's not true though.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, my kids are young adults now, but when they were in high school, they both played sports and the high school athletic departments take that very seriously. If you had any, I mean, all the way down through any kind of sports your kids are playing now, if you have any kind of concussion, you know, you can't sit in front of a computer. I mean, they have this protocol where, you know, there's 2 or 3 days, maybe even a week. I don't know what the numbers are anymore, but you know, you can't do certain things and they have to learn that the teachers have to, you know, the kids will have to catch up on their work or whatever, because they physically can't be in front of a computer screen for a certain number of days until the perception is that they're healed. And so, wow, that's 30, 40 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. They continue to do CTs or x-rays, which only check for fractures in the skull or brain bleeds. Right. You don't always get one with a concussion. So right now in Colorado, there used to be only one place. Now there's three that do an MR-DTI. So it's a diffusion tensor imaging MR, magnetic resonance, right? And it can show the microstructures in the brain impacted by concussions. It can let you know if there's axonal damage. It can let you know how deep into the structures it goes. So we need to be more educated on the correct types of diagnosing. Psychologists can do their testing for memory speed, processing information, and that will give you an idea. Because a lot, like you were saying with the kids, if you were in school, all of that information, they've all told me it hurts. They were AP students, right, in college, and they can't read too long. The information in their brain hurts. They need to take more brain breaks, and then they're forgetting what they've already read or learned. So then you have the memory issues on top of it. Then after that can come depression or anxiety, which the other clients I've had who were older or females, they were poo-pooed off by the experts in the community saying, well, you're menopausal, you are PMSing, right, you're just an anxious filly, this isn't a brain injury, or you can't have delayed onset symptoms. So some of the symptoms may emerge 3 months after the actual injury. And then the doctors say, no, it's not related to that, but it is. In my opinion, I think it's like the brain needed time to heal or for the swelling to come down. And then the symptoms show up. Not being able to sleep, anxious, depressed, irritable, moody. Sometimes they're suicidal. Sometimes they just don't feel safe because they're getting lost. They can't remember their daily activities. They don't feel like themselves. So then some of them have been hospitalized psychiatrically, even if they weren't suicidal. And then that was another trauma for them because now they're in an inpatient with people who are schizophrenic, bipolar, having psychotic episodes. And now they're like, oh my gosh, I'm crazy. I lost my mind. Right.
That's really, unfortunately, I feel like that is the bane of the existence of women in general when it comes to getting healthcare services. Yeah. That there's a perception among a lot of providers, not all, but a lot, that women are overreactive or that they're anal about their symptoms or they're making nervous them up or nervous Nellies about it, you know, and you know, just because you have a different chromosome from most doctors doesn't necessarily mean that what your symptoms are not real and not legit. So It also sounds to me like you're saying that you really have to become your own advocate, which I have experienced with the long-term illnesses and death of both of my parents that, you know, I found out very early that the only person who's an advocate is you or someone who's very close to you, because you're not going to get that advocacy when you're in a patient situation, if you're in a hospital or a rehab or anything like that. It's somebody else. It's either you or somebody else coming in from the outside who's close to you every day, being your advocate about whatever you need from those service providers in the healthcare field. And it's unfortunate that it has to be like that, but that's a good message to remind people that you're going to have to do it or somebody's going to have to do it with you.
And research is showing it can take 1 to 5 years to heal from a concussion or brain injury.
Wow.
And so
that's a long time.
It is. And so you have some people who've been dealing with it for a year. Their spouses are like tired of their saying that, oh, my brain hurts, I need a brain break, I can't do this, right? They're getting tired or exhausted for doing all the household stuff or taking care of the kids. And so then that becomes another issue, is my own spouse isn't believing me, or my own siblings aren't, or they're tired of it. And I can understand, like somebody with a chronic illness, I can understand the frustration, but you don't blame them and say you're using it as an excuse, get off your butt and do stuff.
Right. Yeah. You don't blame them for that. That's correct.
No.
If you were not an EMDR therapist, what would you be?
You know, I thought about that for a little bit. And I thought, you know, my biggest, looking back in my life, my biggest problem, because I've been a public school teacher, I've worked in the prison, I worked for the judicial system. I don't do in the box well. I am so like outside of the box. I wanted to be creative in the ways that I taught. I learn fast. And when I learn fast and I've got it down, After a year or two, I get bored. And then I've got to change careers or have a place that can advance within that so I don't get bored. So I was considering the different professions and I figured with as much time as I spent in school getting my master's and PhD, I probably, if not an EMDR therapist, would have been a medical doctor specializing in brains or neurology or something like that. Or I would have been a professor teaching other people how to do the work that needs to be done.
That's great. It's a great answer. There's no wrong answer for that, but it's also interesting to hear what people think they would have been if they have not gravitated towards therapy. So I always like to ask that question. So is there anything else you'd like to add?
Let's see. When you do EMDR chunk things, you may have to do EMD before you can return to EMDR. So desensitize the parts. People with brain injuries process usually out of order, not all the times, but the parts that stand out to them might be the middle, the end, and then the beginning, or the middle, beginning, and then the end. And so it's different that there is a CPT code now where we as therapists can diagnose somebody with post-concussive syndrome based on their symptoms. So according to the CDC, there's close to 300,000 brain injuries a year that are reported. I don't know how many aren't reported, but there's quite a few people who didn't think it was bad enough to go to the ER or seek treatment for. Right. So even if we doubled that, let's just say conservatively, 500,000 people a year with brain injuries, that's a lot of people.
It is a lot.
Being mindful of that, being able to diagnose it so that they feel validated, somebody's hearing them, they have something on paper saying, see, it's not all in my head, I'm not making this up, right? Oh, there's a ton of ways to get brain injuries. There's obviously, you would think car accidents, and like you mentioned, sports. There's electrocution, there's hypoxic events, anoxic events. So like strokes, brain surgeries to remove tumors, obviously a brain injury, electrocution, suffocation, being punched in the head. So obviously domestic violence, being assaulted where you are hit in the head, car accidents, whether front to back, like shaken baby syndrome, or side to side, if you're T-boned, then you hit your head on the side window, wherever you're sitting, and then your brain reverberates back. And that's where you can have some shearing down into the white matter and get the axons. I'm trying to think of them all. There's a lot that people don't think of. Caustic chemicals, whether somebody's huffing paints or solvents, whether they work in a factory that has those strong chemicals, right? That is something to consider as well. Lack of oxygen at birth, trying to think of all of them, like right off the top of my head. But anyway, there's a lot and people don't consider that. So if you automatically during history taking ask somebody, have you ever had a brain injury? They automatically think big brain injury, coma, reset, and they don't think of these smaller ways. So I always have to ask them, have you ever had a concussion from a sports injury, car accident, slip and fall? And then children and the elderly are more prone to the slips and falls. And then the people in the middle, teenagers to the early 40s, it's more assaults, car accidents, and high adrenaline type sports, rock climbing, ice climbing, you know, those kind of dangerous type
yes.
thrilling things.
Those things that I will never do. Those are not on my bucket list. I'm too much of a fraidy cat. I can't do the height thing, and I have no desire to hang on the side of a mountain. I mean, I know there are people out there who do it, and
sure.
I think it's amazing, you know, but I'm just too much of a fraidy cat for that. So,
and I think, you know, would you jump out of a plane? Because my brother-in-law jumped out of a plane for his 50th. And unfortunately, the main chute didn't open and the backup chute didn't open. So luckily,
oh my God.
He was in tandem and his instructor knew how to get one open.
Right.
Like, oh, the only time I'm jumping out of a plane is if it's going down.
Yeah. If the pilot tells me to jump because we need
exactly.
to. Yeah. Well, my dad was in the Army, so he was not a paratrooper, but you know, that's pretty common with people who do that for a living. They're like, yeah, we're the only ones who actually jump out of perfectly working planes, right? The rescue people. So,
yes.
But thank God for their skill set. But yeah, that's a good idea for therapists to have that information on their intake forms. Those kind of sub questions, you know, like, it's like when you go to the dentist or a new dentist or a new doctor and they have that form and there's like 100 things off there. You have to read through them all if you ever had any of these, you know, issues. But it's very good for people to think a little bit outside the box about how they might have injured their head.
And I tell people, you know, like my grandson had, he was playing T-ball, got a concussion, right? Just this year, I think it was. And I told my son, because he's like, he just got his bell rung. It's like, you know what? You know I'm the expert in this.
I know.
Right? That's... Don't just say that, right? Yeah. But I said, you can get heart transplants. You can have artificial limbs. You can get lungs. You can get everything transplanted.
But except the brain. Yep.
You get one brain, you need to protect it.
That's very true. That's very, very true. Well, I was, I'm a college football fan, and one of the previous quarterbacks of the college team that I happen to like plays for the, I think he's now the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins, and he got clocked about 2 or 3 weeks ago at a game, and they took him off the field. And I just read an article a couple of days ago, says he does not even remember being taken off the field.
Yep.
That's how bad. And I know football is an extremely dangerous sport. It just happens to be the only sport that I understand and watch and like. I do understand basketball because my daughter played it in high school, but I know how dangerous it is to the players. But I thought, wow, that's really scary that something happened to him in an injury setting and he doesn't even remember the after, you know, the card getting carted off the field and going to the locker room. So scary.
People want to know, like, well, that's not that big of a deal. Look at the boxers, Muhammad Ali, when they cut up his brain after he died, all the damage in his brain afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. So I know we enjoy some barbaric sports, you know, do. I'm not a boxing fan because of that. Football I watch professionally, little kids, no, because they're young. I want their brain
developing. Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, but really consider we only have one brain. There's a company that developed an airbag for your head. So a professional bicyclist can wear it and it goes around your neck and head. And as soon as it senses impact or falling, it deploys and it wraps around your head completely with a couple of inches all around it, protecting you from the fall.
Wow.
It's like $300, but if you're invested in a sport, right? Spend the money, protect your head, right?
Worth it. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely worth it. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Boy, there's so much I'd love to say, but I know it's a podcast and it's short. If you've had a brain injury, look into other types of treatment. Maybe find an EMDR therapist that's trained in brain injuries. Get the help you need so that you can start living your life again and not just surviving it. Because surviving it with medication has its place, and I get that. But if you're taking meds to help you sleep, you're taking meds to help your moods, you're taking like Aricept, whatever that is for like dementia to help you with your memory, you don't have dementia, it's from the brain injuries,
right.
And you're on all of these things and you're just kind of getting by day to day, that's just surviving. That's not living.
It is. And it's not good for your body long-term. And it's not good for your pocketbook. I have no idea what, you know, those medications cost, but I'm sure they're not free. And they're probably not $5 a month either. And so there's a cost associated with that, you know, and if you don't need to be on the medication, and if you can find a solution with EMDR therapy, then let's do that, you know?
Yeah, they actually, the research showed that it's millions of dollars to care for somebody who's had a brain injury. And I'm sure they're talking the severe millions, because you've got wheelchairs, you've got AIDS, you've got PT, OT, vision therapy, all of that. And I understand it. But even mild to moderate can cost. Let's say you're in your 20s or 30s and you get one and you can't do that profession anymore. Then you're going to need money to either learn something new, have some time to get going, right? So it can still cost. It affects children in their education. Let's say fifth grade, playing football, baseball, you get a head injury. Now they kids have told me they feel dumbed down, like high schoolers. One told me he just felt dumbed down. He goes, I used to be in AP classes and I don't feel I've got the brain power to do the work anymore. But we worked for 6 months or less, right? Because I think it was every other week. They need a little more time to recover rather than weekly. So within 6 months, the kid was back in AP classes, had caught up, graduated with honors, went on to college.
That's a great success story. There is hope for people with TBI.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. That's wonderful. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This has been the Let's Talk EMDR podcast with Dr. Michelle Morrissey. Visit www.emdria.org for more information about EMDR therapy or to use our Find an EMDR Therapist directory with more than 13,000 therapists available. Our award-winning blog, Focal Point, offers information on EMDR and is an open resource. Thank you for listening.